This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 25th of February, 2022. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I am your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
Sue Gannaway, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Val Hoskins have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin. First of all, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording, please ring the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all one word, .com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Cleanup starts after storm chaos. The Ark reopens after major refurbishment, and cathedral to host stunning light show. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
Cleanup starts after storm chaos. Scores of workers across the country are working to restore order after three storms swept in and battered the region. Homes were left without power and businesses have been left counting the costs of the week-long spell of bad weather. A mammoth clean-up operation is underway across Hampshire as the county recovers from the destruction brought about by three storms. Storm Dudley started on Monday, February the 14th, closely followed by Storm Eunice, and then Storm Franklin hit on Sunday. Nearly a week of stormy weather, which saw winds of 121 miles per hour batter the country, has left many areas counting the costs of the damage. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson estimated that the scale of the response is likely to run into six figures. Leader of Winchester City Council, Lucille Thompson, praised the work of the special maintenance teams brought in to clear up the district. She said, "Our teams went out in the full force of the storm and the days that followed to carry up a huge clear-up operation. They are clearing roads and footpaths as well as sluice gates so that rivers did not flood and making sure that residents were safe. A tree in Cheriton Road crashed into a neighbouring house and brought up the pavements and took out the facilities. Many homes were without power and the last have only just come back on. It was a pretty frightening storm." As well as storm damage that hammered buildings, damaged vehicles and ripped signs from shops, the storm saw at least four people die across the country, including Jack Bristow, a 23-year-old passenger in a vehicle hit by a tree in Old Odeham Road in Alton on Friday, February the 18th. It also brought down more than 1,200 trees in Hampshire, which blocked roads and damaged power cables, leading to more than 120,000 homes in Hampshire without power supply on Friday. The power went out on Friday in Hampshire villages such as Swanmore, Kingsworthy and Cheriton, as well as more urban areas in Winchester. Some faced days of power outages. Businesses were also affected by the impact of the storm and have been left picking up the pieces. The Hampshire Bowman in Dundridge was without power from Friday until Tuesday evening, meaning they could not trade. Mark Newman, who runs the pub with wife Chloe, said, "While the external damage was limited to a few trees and fence panels, the big blow was losing the contents of our fridges and freezers, having just stocked up for the beginning of half term. We were fully booked for the weekend, so it's a lot of trade lost in what is one of the hardest times of year." He said that staff had also lost out in hours, but after a turbulent 2 years of business, he was looking on the bright side. He added, "It could have been worse. People could have been flooded out, had their homes badly damaged, and some lost their lives. We fight on again." Richard Goff, Director of Distribution System Operations at SSE, said the firm's teams had been working hard to restore power. Power teams were not the only ones working hard in difficult conditions. Hampshire Highways brought in extra crews. All planned highway maintenance work was halted and resources redeployed to help with clearing trees and fallen debris on the roads, prioritising main routes and routes to critical services. They reportedly had 2,500 storm-related issues, of which 1,200 were tree and vegetation-related reports. A significant number of these incidents involved multiple trees. Many roads were affected, such as the A34 at Kingsworthy, which saw two lanes blocked, as well as Chilbolton Avenue, Belmore Lane and the B3049. Some more rural roads, such as Salt Lane in Upham, were still blocked at the time the Hampshire Chronicle went to press. A Hampshire County Council spokesperson said, "The recovery operation is likely to take at least a month. There is a vast quantity of timber, vegetation and other debris to clear away from across Hampshire's road network. There will also be essential follow-up repairs to be carried out on Hampshire's roads, footways and fences. The impact of the very high winds has been felt keenly across the county, and highways crews have found that in attending a report of a road blocked by a fallen tree, they often encountered numerous other tree falls on the way, adding extra work and some delay as a result." Schools across the county closed on Friday, the last day before the half-term holidays. Southwestern railway services were also suspended. Southern Water were also left dealing with storm damage. Chief Operating Officer Lawrence Gosden said, "We had very many sites hit by power outages, but prudent pre-event mobilisation and crisis response has kept our customers served in all but a very small number of places." And there are some dramatic photographs to go with that, showing trees blocking roads in Hursley, Cheriton Road, and in Kingsworthy, an unfortunate lady is picking up part of her roof and drain pipe by the look of it. So it truly was something stupendous.
The Ark reopens after major refurbishment. Winchester Discovery Centre has reopened with a new name, The Ark. The doors opened after the completion of a major £715,000 refurbishment. The former library in Jury Street is now being operated by Hampshire Cultural Trust with the aim of being a major cultural hub. The first exhibition is a show by mid-20th century illustrator Eric Revilius called Extraordinary Every Day, The Art and Design of Eric Revilius. The centre remains a library, but there has been a revamp with the ground floor gallery now given over to books and the exhibition space moved to the mezzanine floor. The first show is by Winchester hand weaver and dyer Deirdre Wood. beginning last month, Paul Sapwell, Chief Executive of Hampshire Cultural Trust, said, "Integral to our partnership and the future of Winchester Discovery Centre has been the name of the venue and how it can reflect the broad range of services that we will offer to our many different visitors. The ARC refers to arts, reading and community, and perfectly encapsulates our joint vision. A place where people can come together to experience live performance, art, classes, talks, and access library and community services all together under one roof, in the heart of Winchester. The ARC will continue to offer exhibitions, events, classes, and live performance for all ages and interests, with a range of both ticketed and free activities. Among the well-known names that will be gracing the venue is TV comedian Gary Delaney, while Family Theatre for February half term will be on offer from Zoo Co, with two relaxed performances of Messy. Live music, from regular acoustic nights to alt folk, classical, big band and swing, features on the programme, alongside library favourites Rhyme Time, Story Time and Knit and Natter. Extraordinary Every Day, the art and design of Eric Revilius, features more than 100 artworks and ceramics from 16 UK lenders, including pieces which are rarely seen on public display. Alongside two tours with the exhibition curator James Russell, Extraordinary Every Day is accompanied by a series of events inspired by Revilius and his art. A major new addition to the facilities at the ARC is a brand new digital lab, kitted out with state-of-the-art iMacs, enabling access to the Adobe Suite and other open-source design software. A programme of workshops for those looking to brush up on their skills or develop their existing skills further starts at the beginning of March. All events are now available to view and book at the ARC's website, arcwinchester.org.uk. It's accompanied a picture of a mother and two children sat on the ground floor of what used to be the Discovery Centre, surrounded by shelves with children's books, and looking very happy that the place is now open again.
Cathedral to host stunning light show. A huge display of light and sound will transform the city's cathedral in a stunning showcase. Winchester Cathedral will be hosting a light and sound experience from March the 7th until the 12th. The interior of Winchester Cathedral will host a touring art installation entitled Science. Inspired by the evolution of science, the 900-year-old cathedral will become the canvas for an immersive exploration of the world of science and the ways in which it has shaped the past and will influence the future. This multi-sensory experience transports visitors through elements, molecules, DNA, and the greatest discoveries of humanity. Alison Evans, Chief Operating Officer at Winchester Cathedral, said, "Over the centuries, the relationship between science and religion has ranged from conflict and hostility to harmony and collaboration. We are delighted to be able to host this art installation at Winchester Cathedral to show how science and religion can intertwine, having already seen examples of this when cathedrals across the UK were used as vaccination centres during the pandemic. Now we're opening our doors for a week of science, creativity and spirituality, which will allow visitors to travel through the light artworks set to bespoke music that will encourage them to think about the history of science, all while admiring the splendid architecture in this historic building. The installation is the creation of the award-winning collaboration of artists known as Lux Muralis, a collaborative team of artists from different backgrounds and artistic disciplines who create works across multiple media and presentation formats. Lux Muralis artistic director Peter Walker said, "Both I and my colleague, composer David Harper, are delighted to be bringing Lux Muralis science, son et lumière, to Winchester Cathedral. This is an immersive experience, which takes in almost every part of the magnificent cathedral interior, and will allow those who visit to see the spaces throughout as never before. It is designed for people of all ages and from all backgrounds and will be one of the largest installations produced to date. Our installations are about seeing things in new ways on a vast scale. We create these events with the aim of encouraging people to see the world differently. Spending time in the cathedral, immersed fully in sound and light, we hope will be encouraged, people will be encouraged to engage with key moments in the history of science, seeing our world with a whole new perspective. The installation will be at Winchester Cathedral for 1 week, opening March the 7th from 6:15 p.m, and visitors will need to pre-book tickets. This piece is accompanied by a photograph of the science exhibition at Lichfield Cathedral, where the stonework is covered with vibrant splashes of red, purple and white light."
Thank you. And that concludes the headline stories. I apologise for any background noise you might have heard during the headline section. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Deacon Gerald Walter passed away peacefully at Cedar Lawn Care Home, Romsey, on the 5th of February 2022, aged 93 years. Fisher Muriel Edna, peacefully at St Cross Grange Care Home on Thursday the 17th of February 2022, aged 97 years. Hill Edward Cecil Riverkeeper, 1930 to 2022, will be much missed by all his family and friends. No funeral by request. Hobbs Francis John passed away peacefully after a short illness on 2nd of February 2022, aged 94 years. Large Geoffrey Arnold passed away peacefully on the 7th of February, aged 100. May Simon Morshead of Bishop's Waltham died unexpectedly on 3rd of February 2022, aged 62 years. Moore Pauline Maria Anne passed away after a short period of care in Winchester Hospice on Sunday the 13th of February 2022 at 70 years of age. North Robin John, 1936 to 2022. Robin, at 85, had sadly died after a short illness, courageously fought, peacefully at home with family. Sparksman, Nesta Jean, peacefully at her home on Saturday the 12th of February 2022. Winkworth, Terence Roy, known as Terry, peacefully on Thursday the 10th of February 2022, aged 79 years. The Reverend Philip Crinks is the author of this week's Christian comment. It's headed Spiritual Detox. Thank you, Daphne.
We are used to the idea of an annual detox. Perhaps you have recently had a dry January, or a veganuary, or perhaps, like some wise people I know, you decided on a dry February as well, as it has fewer days. It's too easy to laugh at ourselves as we try to improve our diet. There is no doubt that after a few weeks of smoothies and herbal teas, we notice our bodies in a new way. We feel cleansed, refreshed, and rebalanced. Is there a spiritual equivalent? Do we need to cleanse and refresh our souls? There is, and we do. And the traditional time for it is upon us, the season of Lent, beginning on Wednesday. Named for the lengthening days, Lent is a bit longer than even a long month. It lasts 40 days. We don't count Sundays, so it takes us up to Easter. It's a cliche to ask, what are you giving up for Lent? If we rush to decide on how to keep Lent, we usually reach for a self-denying rule about food, one we know will be hard to keep. So, if you have a love of biscuits, you might make a rule to give them up. Or if, like me, you really love biscuits and are realistic about what to expect of yourself, you at least give up chocolate biscuits. There is a point to Lent rules like this. They are not just another physical detox. Our physical appetites easily become physical dependencies. And physical dependencies have spiritual consequences. But let's start in a different place. If we admit a need for spiritual detox, what is it we really need to be cleansed of? What needs refreshing? The answer is, for most of us, the guilt we feel about things we have done to others and memories we carry of hurts done to us. Some will say, ah, those things are in the past and best forgotten. But the problem is, that is not how we humans work spiritually. We may wish to forget those things, but they don't want to be forgotten. The risk is that we recycle them in our minds and souls again and again. Excuse me. I don't claim to have a better physical detox for you than the diet books. But for these things, the Christian faith does have the answer. It tells us the spiritual equivalent of carrot juice, of lemon and ginger tea. The answer is confession and forgiveness. This Lent, why not carry on with the red wine and biscuits, but commit to sit in silence with the Lord each week? Tell him what you feel you have done wrong. Ask for and accept the forgiveness he freely offers. Rather than adding to the problems of self-justifying or trying to save face, you will savour God's grace. And tell the Lord the ways you feel you have been wronged by individuals or communities. Ask that in the power of the reconciling cross of his Son Jesus, you may be able to forgive them as a share in the vast divine forgiveness. This work takes courage and faith. It may be harder than giving up the biscuits. But is not this what we long for? To come to Easter spiritually cleansed, refreshed, and rebalanced.
Thank you, Daphne. There's a range of subjects in the letters to the editor this week, and we've selected some of the best for you. Nick, can you start us off, please, with city speed limit?
Yes, this one's from Richard Long. Sir, I applaud the campaigners pressing for a 20 mph city-wide speed limit, Chronicle February the 3rd. However, if the County Council commits, they would be wise to examine firstly the efficacy of the existing 20 mph zones and get them working as they should. Putting signs up is not enough. Each area must be analysed and a combination of traffic calming measures assessed to make them work. Over the last 6 months, I've been calling upon the county to address the problem of speeding along Petersfield Road in Winchester, an existing 20 mph zone. County Councillor Dominic Hiscock visited and took on board the problems, but he was informed by Hampshire County Council, HCC, that they were not even considering improvements at this time, and that roads were in a state of managed decline. In December 2021, I wrote to Hampshire County Highways asking for the 20 mph road markings to be repainted. They are all but invisible. Zigzag road markings to be installed outside All Saints Church, the entrance to which serves pupils attending All Saints School and young children attending preschool in the church hall. And for traffic calming at the passageway from Quarry Road. HCC's written response was that, as there had been no injury accidents reported, they could not justify inclusion of traffic calming on their safety programme. Further, they stated that the County Council was scaling back work on larger measures such as lower speed limits, physical traffic calming and heavy goods vehicle controls, unless required to support casualty reduction. Yeah, and that one was from Richard Long, Petersfield Road, Winchester.
This one is headed Pollution Levels, and this is from David Hughes, Downlands Way, South Wanston. Sir, being very conscious of the need to reduce or at least minimise pollution levels, especially in Winchester, I'm always surprised to see measures being introduced that exacerbate that problem rather than help to minimise it. Any measure that results in traffic being impeded will cause more pollution. Braking, accelerating and travelling in a lower and less efficient gear will give rise to greater emissions. So I was concerned to read that pressure is being exerted for a 20 miles per hour speed limit to be imposed throughout Winchester. Simple mathematics show that to traverse the town or to complete any journey at 20 miles per hour will take 50% longer than at 30 miles per hour. Inevitably as well, one such journey will have to be made in a lower and much less efficient gear, hence creating significantly more pollution. There are a range of impediments to the free flow of traffic already in place in this area. Speed humps, pinch points, unnecessary traffic lights at simple road junctions, traffic light controlled pedestrian crossings instead of straightforward zebra crossings, lack of enforcement of parking restrictions, especially in such roads as St George's Street, Jury Street, etc. Against a background of doubtful safety benefits from reducing speed limits to 20 miles per hour, these impediments also have serious consequences for emergency service vehicles, as well as the economic cost of wasted productive time. It seems to me that more joined-up thinking is needed.
And now a very short letter from Christine Holloway on the same topic of cars. Sir, nest boxes attract more birds. Jam attracts more wasps. More roads attract more cars. Too many cars drive into Winchester already. Traffic will double if there's a new through road through King's Barton and it's decided to keep Andover Road open to cars as well. Anyone who argues for Andover Road to be kept open must also campaign for King's Barton to be a low traffic area with no through routes. Look at Oliver's Battery. And that's from Christine Holloway, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Brian Laming writes on the Sheila list. And that's Sheila, spelt S-H-E-E-L-A. Sir, I wanted to write to you about your editorial comment of February the 10th, raising the issue of the Tory smear of the Liberal Democrats over development. The leaflet that they have been distributing across the district claims that there will be an additional 53,000 houses built, because that is what is in the Sheila. The Sheila is a developer wish list and not a reality. The leaflets are causing concern and worrying residents that every green field will be a housing estate. I have had emails from concerned and angry residents who know that these leaflets are not truthful and want an explanation from the Conservative councillors. They want to know why they are putting out information that is inflammatory and not truthful. I would therefore ask the local Conservatives, are we heading for an election that is populist and fanning the flames of fear? Or are they going to distance themselves from these tactics? There is an issue of trust nationally with the Conservative Party. Is the local party going the same way? And that was from Brian Laming, Lib Dem councillor, Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward, Wheatland Close, Winchester.
This letter from Councillor Steve Crammoison, Worthies Ward, Winchester City Council, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy, is on the same subject. Sir, I'd like to congratulate the Hampshire Chronicle for the February the 10th editorial, calling out the misinformation being promoted by the Conservatives to smear the Lib Dems over the Sheila list of sites for possible development. Sadly, another piece of Conservative Party misinformation managed to slip through into the same issue. This shows how difficult it is for both journalists and the public to separate out the truth from misinformation. In the article on the closure of Andover Road, Conservative campaigner Miss Sina Biddle is quoted as saying, "We call on Carla Holmes and Winchester City Council to review the original planning permission and work with the County Council to come up with an option to suit the majority of residents." The implication of this is that Winchester City Council is not cooperating. Nothing could be further from the truth. The facts are that Hampshire County Council will inherit the roads when Carla completes development. Carla Holmes designed the road layout with advice from Conservative-controlled Hampshire County Council. As these plans were not approved locally, Carla appealed to the Conservative Secretary of State for Housing, Eric Pickles, who approved them in 2012. Winchester City Council has no authority to override a decision made by a Secretary of State. This can be checked. If the Conservatives truly wanted to get things changed, they would identify the correct authority to persuade. Conservative control, Hampshire County Council. They know this because Miss Biddle asked a question of Council, to which Councillor Todd provided a written answer explaining it. Either they failed to understand the answer, or they are deliberately misleading the public for electoral gain. You decide. Only Carla and Hampshire County Council have the authority to change the road designs, to allow Andover Road to remain the main route. The financial implications for both parties would be considerable. I believe there is more chance of finding a unicorn than of persuading both Carla and Hampshire County Council to make those changes.
And now on a different topic, Simon Lever writes, "Sir, there seems to be a strangely normal procedure for Winchester City Council to decide on a development, state there is public consultation, and, regardless of the result, proceed with the plan. In this case, the River Park and Skate Park facilities. The legality of such a move is highly questionable. As for a 150-year lease, I have the impression that only a local council could agree such a term. Winchester is a wonderful city. However, there are few sports or parkland facilities. Essentially, selling off such facilities to another city, Southampton University, is beyond comprehension. The City Council exists to serve Winchester's residents, not Southampton University. As for meetings behind closed doors, quotes, not wanting to raise expectations, close quotes, it says it all. We must protect our unique city, as once such plans proceed, they cannot be reversed. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Eileen Berry writes about Olympic sport. Sir, I cannot believe that the skateboarding activities are possibly being considered to be taken out of the North Walls Recreation Park. Skateboarding has now been accepted in the Olympics worldwide as a bona fide sport. The very name recreational in this wonderful open space that we have in the North Walls Park suggests outdoor activities, i.e. tennis, outdoor bowls, cricket, football and rugby. At times, when the weather permits, outside gymnastics. All healthy and wonderful. It should be continued as such. If we look at what's available for people to take their families to, and enjoy all those activities as well, this idea of taking the skateboarding out suggests that nothing is safe. To think that without real consultation, openness and transparency, the councils have allowed the University of Southampton to build an extension to the Arts College. Hopefully this can be proved to be illegal. Not only should it be illegal, it's an insult to the Winchester people and its youth that it should be given to an outside body rather than concentrate on what is needed here for our youth and for the furtherment of physical and mental well-being. With all the signatures, which I believe are 1,000 and more coming, it seems that nobody, neither the City Council nor the Hampshire County Council, are listening to the people. In fact, it's almost as if the outcry against all this happening was expected and considered absolutely of no consequence whatsoever. Just fully go ahead. This is the one time that you can honestly say that youth are being attacked by the erosion of amenities. We cannot confuse all the open area activities with the indoor activities at Bar End. That's the beauty of North Walls. You have the river, you have the spaces. This supposed building is an encroachment which could be the first nail in the coffin of this open space. That is not to say that young people that benefit from the Art College are not important. They are. There are plenty of other places that should be considered for the building work, not the encroachment of North Walls Recreation Ground. Of all that is wrong at this moment in time that is happening in this city, this particular infringement worries me deeply. Mainly for the youth of the city who like outdoor life. From Eileen Berry, Prasdean Road, Hairstock.
Village Broadband, Dr. Graham Cresswell of Kilmiston, Alsford, writes, Sir, I was intrigued to read the piece in the Chronicle on February the 10th outlining the help given by Flick Drummond to the householders of Uzzlebury in their campaign for fibre broadband to their premises. Since before December 2019, we have been running a similar campaign for Kilmiston, Bramdean and parts of Cheriton, with almost no result. So far, Mrs. Drummond's efforts on our behalf have come to naught. In our patch, we have poor broadband speeds, around 2 megabytes for some users, and mobile phone coverage, which is at best intermittent. We spent many, many hours and much shoe leather collecting data and commitments from householders on behalf of Openreach, so we have essentially been doing their work for them. Despite this, we're constantly told that we have moved down the priority list, or that the government funding is held up, or some other excuse. Uslebury, you have reported. Beauth has been connected for several months. Parts of Cheriton have had fibre to the premises for much longer. We repeatedly hear stories, although unconfirmed, from these parishes, alleging that influential residents, such as NHS executives, BT executives, and others with clout, have been able to influence Openreach and secure priority. In Kilmerston alone, we have, to my certain knowledge, 7 practising NHS doctors and many others trying to work from home. One resident is trying to run engineering support for the London Underground on a 4G phone signal. I very much hope that soon Mrs. Drummond will enjoy the same success and plaudits for us as she has had in Uslebury. But we're not holding our breath.
And now, rather an interesting little letter from Janet Lloyd about the St. Clement's Surgery anchor. Sir, having been a patient at St. Clement's since 1979, I feel that it is almost unbelievable that the new building is finally coming to fruition after so many false starts. The present building is certainly not fit for purpose, but I appreciate that many hurdles have been negotiated to get thus far. One very important feature has not yet been discussed, as far as I can tell. What is going to happen to the anchor? As I understand it, St. Clement was martyred by being thrown overboard tied to an anchor, but was miraculously saved from drowning. There must be a place for the anchor at the new premises, but this time an explanatory plaque must be in a prominent position to put it in context. I would imagine most people will know oranges and lemons, but few will have connected this story with the anchor. That's from Janet Lloyd, Oliver's Battery Gardens, Winchester.
Margaret Grant is now going to take us down Memory Lane in South Wanstead. Sir, here's one for South Wanstead residents. The 1940s. An unmade lane of small houses and bungalows. A little church, now renovated and recited as being of historical interest. This where my brother was christened and also used as Doctors Lugy and Edelson's surgery. I lived in Sunny Mount, a bungalow without electric, water and main sewage, a bucket and chucket toilet outside, water from a pump in a leaking lean to be replaced later by a mains pipe, lighting from an Aladdin oil lamp and candles, a large garden with chickens, ducks, veg and fruit trees. Mum made our butter, jams and kilner jars full of fruits. Bartering of foods was well known. So many more memories could also be told of our life there. So many names could be mentioned. Here's a few. Mr. Ward, he of the flying winged jodhpurs, had the stables. Tommy Green, with fold chains and rings. John, Rosie and Tilly, with gold earrings and strawberry fields, who lived at the bottom of the lane. Mr. Harris, who with my dad and other ex-servicemen built the original British Legion hut. Roderick's mum, Mrs. Taylor, who gave me crusty bread with treacle. This is just a few. Shops, Lidl's, That's spelt LIDDELS. Mrs. Spackman and the post office, where the geese would come out and chase you at times. We children were free to roam, eat anything and everything. Beech and hazelnuts, agags, blackberries and wild strawberries, grass with the sweet stalk when pulled, and the core of a green veg, also very sweet. By farmer Mr. Stainer, fetes with fancy dress and ball games were held, along with Mr. Ward's gymkhanas. Some visitors would come down to their places from London, maybe to get away from the happenings in the city, Mum said. If you need more faces, names and memories, I have so many. Just ring the Chronicle. Why is it I remember and see so much from way back, but forget what I went upstairs for? What next, you might ask? From Margaret Grant, née Ayling, Brereton Road, Hairstock.
This is a very short letter called A Quick Response, and it's from Libby Cleaver, Ashton Close, Bishops Waltham. Sir, I would like to give my thanks to our local electricity service, SSEN, who responded so well to the power cuts caused by Storm Eunice. I have learned that they sent out helpful emails to vulnerable consumers before the storm arrived. Here in Bishops Waltham, our power was back again within 8 hours. It is reassuring to know that our power services are in such good hands.
Thank you, Rita. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's the 01962 860836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk, or you could even write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Right, we'll continue now with the editorial comment, first person and Bell Gungram. So, the editor writes, good work from emergency teams. Not since 1987 have we seen a storm of such force. And just like the old wives' tale, or buses, or great films, it came in three. First, Dudley swept in on Valentine's Day. Then Eunice arrived shortly after with the army. Then Franklin topped everything off on Sunday. Bins were toppled, trees blocked roads, roofs came off buildings, plans were cancelled and rail services ground to a halt. Teams of workers, including the news team here at the Hampshire Chronicle, put on their frog suits and got stuck in. As much as our team was busy, we really do have to hand it to the teams of workers who unblocked our roads, kept our services running, and reconnected power supplies. It was a challenge enough to walk down Winchester High Street, let alone climb poles and sort cables or close roads and clear trees. If the pandemic has taught us anything, it's how to adapt to an unprecedented situation. Businesses and authorities swiftly implemented emergency plans, and apart from some houses that were without power for arguably too long, they largely worked successfully. Bravo. Now, Joanna Lewis writes that Putin makes me sick. Rita.
Damn it! We should be celebrating. It's the end of COVID-19 restrictions. We've survived Storm Eunice. Spring is around the corner and the shops are full of Easter eggs. Why aren't we planning parties and skipping around like newborn lambs? Alas, there's a menace, a mayhem and a madness in the air. not the impact of the national shortage of HRT. It's that other hormonally imbalanced situation on the edge of Europe. I'm referring to the love child of Colonel Klebb and Goldfinger. Yes, Vladimir Putin. He who feels the need to display national virility via that litmus test of classic imperialism, the ability to invade another country and create your own reality. Mad, bad and dangerous to know was said about the infamous Lord Byron. In the case of this Dark Lord, it's more short, bald and what a plonker. Is this really what's at the root of this crisis? The wrong personality in the top job, obsessed about failing strength, resulting in the reckless and calculated tearing up of the post-Second World War peace settlement? That was designed to avoid the kind of horrendous end-of-days conflict which only advanced states with their sprawling industrial military nuclear complex can wreak on each other. The unprovoked invasion of a democratic country is unfolding before our eyes, with the potential loss of life of tens of thousands of innocent civilians, not to mention young men in combat. Has history thrown up a megalomaniac in power too long and who wants the job for life? True, he is a dullard. He lies about his height. He is so vain he wears 3-inch heels and has specially made wide trousers to hide them in official photographs. Now aged 69 and less able to strike a topless pose, is invasion an attempt to maintain his cultivated macho image? Row upon row of large battery guns pointing upwards. They have made male menopause and they have male menopause written all over them. And yet, since I work in a department of international history, I am duty bound to point out the potentially dire scenario unfolding for Ukraine as the final end game of the long Cold War. Russia, in effect, lost the Cold War with the collapse of its satellite states and Marxist-style allies, symbolised by the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. The democratisation movements of the early 1990s and the reforms of Gorbachev. And Putin and his cronies have beef. The Kremlin and Russia's militarised state bureaucrats never really stood down. Hardened and hardwired to be anti-democratic, paranoid, and incapable of accepting opposition, that mentality of being at war remained. Putin, after all, was a KGB foreign intelligence officer for 16 formative years. The Cold War military state paraphernalia, including the Kremlin's crucial propaganda warfare capability, remained intact. The grudge mentality goes deep and wide for this older generation. In the 1990s, senior Russian officials were left smarting over a number of Western diplomatic humiliations. Then high-profile KGB defectors exposed Russian secrets. Opposition leaders and human rights activists found sanctuary in the West. London became home to many ambitious oligarchs. Pre-1945 history understandably has taught Russians to fear Central European expansionism eastwards. But it's the opposite emboldening Putin today. The West has looked impotent over in the face of Russian incursions against state sovereignty, counterinsurgency, and the violation of human rights. Let's not forget what happened in Salisbury, and with very little inconvenience to Russia. Nevertheless, in the long term, hopefully, this will be the final Russian throw of the end of the Cold War dice. Ordinary people then and now wanted to live more freely without fear of a tyrannical state. Once a people have national sovereignty and the taste of freedom, they won't give it up.
Now we have a couple of lighter moments from Belgarum this week. Nick, please tell us more.
Yes, the first one is under the title Close Lawn Being Revamped. The grassy oasis of the cathedral's inner close is currently more a brown colour. The grass lawn has recently seen the turf lifted and the ground being prepared before it will be reseeded, depending on the weather. The lawn takes a battering and is usually covered for a couple of months a year by an ice rink and German-style chalets. A sign to the public says, "Thank you for respecting this special place and keeping off the grass." And that piece is accompanied by a photograph taken looking away from the cathedral down through the inner close, past where the Christmas market normally is, and you can see that it's a big brown expanse in the middle with one or two tire tracks on it. No sign of any grass anywhere. Moving on to the second piece, that's called Cranes Towering Over the City. Cranes have sprouted over developments across Winchester. The towering machines are working over Colebrook Street, Winchester College's new sports centre, and next to the council flats on Winnell Manor Road. The cranes will be gone in due course once the building work is complete. The heaviest looking crane is at St John's Winchester Charity, but it is not the only crane needed to lift heavy loads in confined spaces. One is also in use at Winnell Close, and another at the sports centre of Winchester College off Norman Road. Belgarum wouldn't want to have them there all the time, but in confined Winchester, they get the eye to look up and look longer distances than one would normally in an urban development. And there's three pictures of different cranes there. The one at Winnell, the one at Colebrook Street and Norman Road, all looking remarkably the same, which you can probably imagine. A thin, tall tower, steel-framed, and then a sort of long arm attached to it, which can rotate from being completely upright to being horizontal, counterbalanced by a large block of concrete on the other side. One for us to think about.
Thank you, Nick.
Take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. First of all, we've heard about an open site, Hampshire's largest organisation supporting people with sight loss, will be holding an information day on the 16th of March at the Winchester Discovery Centre, or ARC as we now call it. The day will run from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. Open site independent living advisors and equipment demonstrators will have their latest low vision aids and daily living equipment for demonstration. This is a great opportunity to come along and find out information and advice about the services in the Winchester area. Say that's on the 16th of March, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. Other things that are happening, we've got TV star Kate's new tour. One of the UK's best-known TV presenters, Kate Humble, is preparing a new live tour and is heading to Winchester this spring. Fans can expect tales of travel, adventures, animals and more when An Evening with Kate Humble visits the Theatre Royal on Tuesday, May the 24th. We've also heard about a classical guitar society concert. The society is based in Chandler's Ford and is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. It's the Southampton Classical Guitar Society. Every year they put on two concerts by internationally acclaimed classical guitarists at the Turner Sims Concert Hall at Southampton University. On April 2nd, the composers Vincent Lindsay Clarke and Roland Chadwick will play their latest compositions, one of which is a celebration of the Society's anniversary. Tickets are £20 each and are on sale now. Visit scgs-guitar.org.uk for more details on that. And just a little one here if you're in the Alsford area. The next concert of Alsford Community Choir will be at the Watercress Festival on Sunday, May the 15th at 2 p.m. in St. John's Church. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 26th of February, the sun will set at 5:40 p.m. and on Wednesday the 2nd of March, the sun will rise at 6:49 a.m. and set at 5:47 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, and the first item is Tennis Coach hosts 24-hour fundraiser. A kind-hearted tennis coach helped Children's Hospice by playing and coaching his much-loved sport for 24 hours. Alex Forster, tennis coach and founder of AJ's Tennis Academy near Bishop's Waltham, put on a 24-hour tennis event to raise money for Naomi House and Jack's Place. Alex said, "Over the last few months, I have seen stories of children who are poorly or suffering abuse, so I set out with a thought that I wanted to do something for kids. I was coaching a new client and mentioned to her that I wanted to do something for charity. She then told me she worked for Naomi House and Jack's Place. Perfect! I have already raised over £1,300 in just 2 days and would love to raise more." Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices provide 24-hour care to more than 360 life-limited and life-threatened children and young adults from across central southern England. They offer respite, community, emergency, end-of-life and post-bereavement care. Alex, a dad of two, said, "I have a little boy and baby girl. I now can't remember my life before them. My family are everything. Hearing stories about poorly children that are suffering really hits me hard, and I wanted to do something to give back." Alex started playing tennis aged just 3, and he started coaching at 13. He studied sport coaching and development at Gloucester University and has held a variety of coaching roles. He's also coached Lee Childs, an ex-professional tennis player, and Andrew Penny, who is in the GB National Junior Tennis Programme. People booked an hour's tennis session with Alex on February the 20th at his indoor facility at Hazelholt Farm, Dundridge Lane near Bishop's Waltham. Sessions included private lesson, group lesson, a casual hit, or even a group cardio session. To find out more, go to justgiving.com/fundraising/AJS Tennis Academy 24-hour tennis or contact Alex on 07-885-792290.
Fresh way to shop cuts out middlemen. A new way to shop local has arrived in Winchester thanks to an innovative online marketplace. The initiative, which has been spearheaded by Burntwood Farm and Worthy East, is aimed at offering small-scale food producers and consumers an alternative to the unsustainable supply chain model of the major supermarkets. It works by establishing a collective of food producers and customers in an online group known as a RECO ring, that's R-E-K-O, which is an abbreviation for fair consumption in Finnish, its country of origin. Customers are matched with producers via social media, enabling them to access a range of local produce such as meat, vegetables, eggs, preserves and milk, while producers can charge fair prices without middlemen. Edmund Sutcliffe of Burntwood Farm, who organised the initiative, said, "With RECO, we can collectively support a different way of buying food, which is produced solely by people in the local area, in a caring and sustainable manner that reduces carbon emissions and plastic packaging associated with supermarket-bought food. It is a small, active step customers can take to make a big social impact on the future of our society. This model has already enjoyed great success in Scandinavia and is spreading over the world, creating a supportive economic environment for small-scale ethical food production. Local customers are invited to join this Facebook group, which can also be an email list. Each week, members are notified by the producers about availability of products and prices. A weekly collection point and time has been established where all producer members of the group bring their pre-sold products to customers who have already reserved and bought them. This means producers can get back to their farm duties quickly and customers can resume their lives with a car boot full of fresh, ethical, local produce with minimal hassle. Producers and customers are able to meet face-to-face, old-fashioned style, empowered by modern social technology, and without having to hand over money. Social media platforms like Facebook can be used as a general force for good, if used for the purposes of organising more efficient, shorter food supply chains within our local area, restoring power to local people and food producers alike." And that article is accompanied by a photograph of Edmund Sutcliffe of Burntwood Farm walking down a track with a young black calf over his neck, held over his neck with its front and rear feet tied together. But calf very much alive and well, I think, when the photo was taken.
Not for long.
Thank you.
This article is about a repair cafe which has opened in the Meon Valley. A repair cafe has recently opened at Waltham Chase Methodist Church. Three men from the church decided to see what they could do to reduce the amount of broken portable domestic items being taken to the local tip. The project started its trial period meetings once a month for several months before the grand opening in February. A shipping container was installed in the church car park and fitted out with workbench and tools. Also, a basement room was allocated in the church. There are now about seven men who go to fix things on the first Saturday morning of each month. Martin Letts from Waltham Chase Methodist Church said, "It was great to see everyone pulling together. Most of all, it was wonderful to be able to share with others in determining how we all move forward in overcoming these 21st century challenges. It's a good demonstration of how churches and local authorities can enjoy each other's company and build strong links. Volunteers are always needed with skills to help repair items such as domestic, electrical and mechanical goods, jewellery, leather and even clothing. One lady comes along to assist us, and any other ladies who wish to offer their skills are, of course, very welcome. To contact the Meon Valley Repair Cafe, email admin@r-men.org.uk. And there is a very cheery photograph accompanying this. There are seven men, all wearing the same kind of shirts, all smiling and waving. And they have there an advertising, one of those long, tall, thin advertising flags with a big weight at the bottom, which says Repair Cafe.
Poet takes to streets in the city. Poet Johnny Fluffy Punk, and I'm not sure that that is his real name, took to the streets to inspire Winchester people with his new guidebook to life. Johnny recently took to the High Street to promote Winchester Poetry Festival's new book, Winchester, A Poetic History in Inconsequential Moments. The book presents a poetic guide to Winchester's history, incorporating quirky memories of people in their favourite Winchester spots. The release follows the success of the festival's Poet on the High Street feature, supported by the National Lottery Heritage Fund, which began in June. The resident poet brought a unique mix of stand-up poetry and performance to the city last Thursday, running pop-up poetry sessions and poetry workshops. Johnny said, "I am very proud to have been Winchester's first poet on the High Street. It has been brilliant connecting with the people of the city who have shared so generously their moments and memories, whether they be toddler tantrums, a pub where a relationship ended, or a moment someone sat on a bench in the Cathedral Close and shared a packet of Monster Munch. I've loved sitting in cafes and writing poems for people. I've loved setting up a table in the street and gathering stories. I've been welcomed behind the scenes by shopkeepers, and I've led people through familiar streets trying to inspire wonder in the mundane. I've loved taking poetry out to the people of Winchester and hearing their words in return." A National Lottery Heritage Fund grant of £9,100 was contributed for the Poet on the High Street programme, among other contributions from Winchester City Council, Winchester BID, BID, and the Town Forum. And there's a picture of Johnny Fluffy Punk standing outside the Discovery Centre, or ARC, as we must all call it now. His arms wide apart with, it looks like, a takeaway coffee in one arm and a packet of sandwiches in the other. And he's declaiming, I can't imagine what the poem is about, but people are standing around looking interested.
Award for team behind Labrador puppies being rehomed. An animal welfare team has won an award after ensuring puppies found abandoned on the South Downs Way last year were rehomed. The Labrador puppies were found last October, with seven on the footpath near Chesford Head and an eighth near Alsford Golf Club. They were taken to Three Oaks boarding kennels near Bishop's Waltham, where they are said to have thrived. The kennels provide a stray dogs service for Winchester City Council. A City Council spokesperson said, "Our animal welfare team have won their 10th RSPCA Gold Paw Print Award this year, and they continue to champion the welfare and protection of animals across the Winchester district. We can confirm that the puppies were placed with a rescue charity." The award saw Dave Griffiths and Ross Shepherd recognised for going above and beyond for their work protecting, rehoming and returning stray dogs to their owners. And, of course, that piece is accompanied by a lovely big picture showing all seven of the Labradors, each being held by a holder. and all looking very happy in true Labrador fashion. So a story with a nice ending there.
Reader.
Masterpiece returns to college. After 10 years away, an 18th century art masterpiece has returned to Winchester College and is now on public display. François Lemoine's Annunciation, painted in 1727, is on show in the Treasury Museum, which is open daily from 2 until 4 p.m. It has, for those past 10 years, been on loan at the National Gallery in London. The college wants it to be on show in Winchester, and a new home has been created in the museum. Headmaster Dr. Tim Hans said, "We are delighted to welcome back this beautiful painting to Winchester College. This means that Winchester residents have a new masterpiece on their doorstep to visit and enjoy. It was really important to us that the public should be able to continue to see this important work of art for free, and therefore I am particularly pleased that we have found it a new home in our Treasury Museum. The Annunciation has been at the college since 1729 and originally hung above the altar in the chapel. It was a gift from John Burton, headmaster of Winchester, from 1724 to 1766. Entry to the school museum has been free since September 2019. And this piece is accompanied by a photograph of the main gate in College Street to the college, and two men are very carefully carrying in the painting, which is beautifully wrapped up against damage. You can just see the design through the wrapping, and it looks to be possibly as much as 8 feet long by 4 feet wide. So a real treat to go and see that.
Debut novel helps recovery. A man who turned his life after addiction, turned it around by going to recovery and joined a creative writing class, has published his debut novel, telling the story of drugs and modern slavery. Martin White, 46, has published a borderline dystopian science fiction novel named Faze, spelt F-A-Z-E, set in a society forced into addiction by taking a drug that turns them into slaves. The author, who has been a chef for most of his life, said his novel is a cross between George Orwell's 1984 and the Mad Max film series. Having left school at a young age, Martin turned his life around and got into writing 8 years ago, after he went into recovery. "When I started the senior school, I just avoided it," Martin said. "I bunked the classes and stayed around people's houses. I was disconnected from school. Around that time, I lost my father in a car accident, and there were a few other things that happened in my personal life. I also got into bad habits. Although I wasn't a terrible child, I wasn't the best teenager either." Martin said he became an addict during this time, but he always wanted to write. "While I was in recovery, I started going to a writing class," he said. "Catherine Talley, the lady who took the course, saw my work and told me I have a talent. She also diagnosed the fact that I was dyslexic. She was instrumental in my journey. She asked me, why don't I go back to school and re-educate myself? A little bit later, I went to Andover College as a mature student and did a 2-year creative writing course. I passed it with flying colours." It was during this time Martin wrote a collection of short stories, which was a platform for his debut novel. "The short stories were a twist of nursery rhymes and fairy tales," Martin said. Martin also joined Winchester University. Now in his second year, he is preparing a sequel for his debut novel. The first book is also being adapted to an audiobook and a graphic novel.
Milo turns 2 on special date named Tuesday. Families across Winchester shared their excitement as they celebrated birthdays and anniversaries on Tuesday. The day, 22/02/2022, is a palindrome and ambigram, which means that it reads the same backwards and forwards, whilst the digits can also be arranged in vertical order and read upside down. The date, which won't come back in our lifetime, has proved a popular talking point. And for one Winchester family, the date is even more special, as it sees an extra two added to the mix, as Milo Balicki celebrated his second birthday. His mother, Claire Balicki, said, "It's crazy to be two on the 22/02/22. He's very excited. We want to wish him a happy second birthday." Others were doing more mundane activities, such as Alice Chank Tyson, who took her daughter to the orthodontist at 2:20 p.m. "Not sure if that counts," she said. And there's a picture there of little Milo looking as though he's midway through his breakfast, actually. I'm sure he was very impressed with the occasion.
Thank you, Nick.
Police officers to ride dirt bikes. Police officers will soon be seen riding dirt bikes in a fresh bid to tackle antisocial behaviour. Hampshire Constabulary's Roads Policing Unit has recently been having problems with young people on mopeds and bikes. When police arrive on the scene, the youngsters flee down alleyways where police cars cannot follow them. Now, Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones has announced that the force will get 3 dirt bikes that will allow them to pursue these young offenders, promising an entirely new tactical option. She said, "This is being funded by the Safer Roads Fund, which is built up by profits from speed awareness courses, and the rest will come from my PCC budget. This is for 3 dirt bikes that will be modified in the Hampshire Constabulary garages and will soon be good to go. The reason I've decided to invest in this is that the Roads Policing Unit told me it's difficult to apprehend teenagers who are creating antisocial behaviour in our communities. Mrs. Jones is putting forward £15,000 from her antisocial behaviour fund for the bikes. Police using dirt bikes is not a new idea, with a number of police forces up and down the country already having a handful in their arsenal. The 3 bikes will be split between Havant and the west side of Southampton, and it is hoped that they will be in use by April."
Now, this item has been written by Chronicle reporter Harvey Lindsay, and it's about happenings at Pi Caramba, which is a specialist pie shop and cafe in Parchment Street, Winchester. He writes, "When a Pi Caramba leaflet landed on my desk, I smirked confidently and booked a table for the following week. I laughed at the prospect of failing this challenge, the challenge to eat 3 pies in 10 minutes in return for a Pi Caramba t-shirt and a picture on the Wall of Fame. On the day of the challenge, I received an email from pie shop owner Rob Litchfield asking me to let him know 3 pies that I'd like to eat. I chose 2 sweetie pies, which contain sweet potato, roasted garlic and goat's cheese, as well as a Mac to the Future, which contains macaroni cheese, sun-dried tomatoes and a hint of chilli. I wandered over to Parchment Street, where I was pleasantly greeted by Rob and taken to my table, where 3 of the largest pies I had ever seen were staring me right in the face, followed by a jug of gravy and an apron for my white shirt. They arrived stacked on top of each other, with mash and mushy peas in between each pie, acting as cement to keep the tower from falling. With a count of three, I got my knife and fork ready and gently placed the pies next to each other, in fear of them toppling over and falling onto the floor, whilst mashing the thick pastry as much as I possibly could. Steam blew up into my face like a volcano erupting, and without thinking about second-degree burns, I shovelled as much food into my mouth, knowing full well I haven't got a chance in beating Daniel, who currently holds the pie scraper record of 4 minutes and 40 seconds. 7 minutes pass, and steam is still being pushed into my face as I carry on eating despite burning my tongue. The temperature of the pies is starting to become uncomfortable now, and the buttons on my shirt look like they're going to pop open. I hate to admit it, but at this point I mentally admit defeat. The 9-minute mark finally arrives, and by this point I've completely given up. So here we are, 40 seconds to go, I still can't see my plate, and I'm taking deep breaths to keep me from passing out. The timer finally beeps and Rob appears out of nowhere. He takes one look at me and my plate. He doesn't look impressed.
Well, on that note, I'm sorry to say that that's all that we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet. Place the correct address label on the front and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. To our editors, Sue Ganaway, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Val Hoskins. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you very much for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.